Welcome to Common Good, the Values in Capitalism podcast brought to you by the American Enterprise Institute. This is Tyler Castle coming from downtown Washington, D.C. in the 11th floor studio at AEI. On this episode, our guest is Evan Koons, who is the co-host of a great new video series from the Acton Institute. He gives us a view into the series that asks the big question, what is our salvation actually for? But before we get to that conversation, I'm joined by my friend and colleague Andy Quinn, who is a research associate here at AEI. How's it going, Andy?
I am good, Tyler. Thank you for having me.
Of course. Thanks for coming on. So you are heading up this new website and blog called thepursuitofhappiness.com. What's that all about?
So Washington, D.C. Tends to get really wrapped up in these kind of second-order debates that are well downstream of the really big questions. And that's really important, the details and substance of policy. You need to get those right, and that's the business that AEI has traditionally been in.
But that's boring.
Yeah, and... Your words, but I kind of like it.
All right.
But with that said, recently we're also kind of very intentionally stepping back and tackling those big questions head on. What are the elements of a meaningful life? What do humans actually need to live happy and, you know, happy and flourishing lives? And so under AEI's president, Arthur Brooks, we've started this new initiative called the Program on Human Flourishing that really tries to tackle those big questions head on and ask, what does the pursuit of happiness mean in the 21st century?
And how does policy sort of
fit
into that? Yeah.
It's sort of equal parts, kind of applied moral philosophy, public policy, and social science research.
Gotcha. That's awesome. And so this website, what's the point of the website and blog?
So on thepursuitofhappiness.com, we have several different features. We have a kind of a curated section of just cool news and links and headlines and inspiring content from around the web, kind of like a Pinterest board for happiness and human flourishing, if you will. The part that I'm most responsible for is the blog section called Insights, where we dig into interesting studies about the impacts of different public policies or about what makes people happy and how is money involved in that and how is, you know, shelter and social connections and civil society involved in that, and kind of tries to tie together all these elements in a way that is always referencing back how these issues are relevant to real people in their real lives, to these fundamental bedrock principles, and not getting lost in the weeds as much as DC sometimes has a tendency to do.
Absolutely. And I know it just got off the ground, but there's already been some great posts. I've enjoyed them at least. So
thank you. Thank you. That's all I need, Tyler.
That's good.
Sufficient endorsement.
All right. Well, thanks for coming on, Andy. I appreciate you sharing a little bit about that.
Absolutely. Yeah. Thanks for having me. And again, that's thepursuitofhappiness.com. Appreciate anyone checking it out.
Yeah, definitely check it out. All right. We'll take a quick break and be back with Evan Koons. Stay with us. Is this just an illusion that I made inside my head to get me by? We're back with our guest, Evan Koons. Evan is a writer and actor and is the co-host of the Acton Institute's new film series, For the Life of the World, Letters to the Exiles, which on his website he describes as a 7-part educational documentary that explores the bigger, more scandalous picture of Christianity's role in the world. How's it going, Evan? Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
So scandalous. I like that word. It gets people's attention, right?
Yeah. Jesus, scandalous? What?
I don't know about that. I think that's like heretical in some way, but it's okay. We still invited you on, so, you know, it's all right. We still accept you. Tell me, what motivated you to do this project? I know you sort of played a central role in this. You starred in it and you wrote at least a little bit of the script with Stephen Grable. Could you just kind of describe the motivation that got this project started?
Yeah, well, and I also have to give a shout out to a couple other writers as well. Dave Phelps was a big contribution. I mean, he was one of the main contributors to it. It was a team of us, as well as Stephen Pell. We all kind of just sat in a room for 9 months. But so what was my motivation? I think, you know, it was really weird because about a year before it actually started, I just said, like, I need an adventure. Like, I need to go on an adventure. And I didn't know what that looked like. And I just knew that that's something that I wanted. And when Dave and company came to me and said, hey, would you be interested in you know, maybe sitting in on this? We don't know what it's going to look like just yet, but it's going to be pretty awesome. I said, yeah. And then as we were going over some of the stuff that they had wanted to talk about, that central question of, like, what is salvation actually for sort of came out, and I thought, well, Whoa.
It's an important question.
Yeah, and it's not a question. It's not a question we often address, or that we really. I think it's one that's sort of in our brains, but we really don't know how to answer it. You know, so hearing that question and then actually thinking, like, yeah, what is this all about? Like, how is this supposed to sort of define everything about my existence and not just what happens post sort of temporal existence or something like that?
Yeah.
And then the other thing that really motivated me was I was tired of Christianity, you know? Like, I wasn't abandoning it, and I, you know, I still believe in Jesus and all that stuff, but I was just sort of really disenfranchised with the church and just thinking, like, so we're not doing this right, I don't think. And I can't exactly put my finger on it, but something isn't going right here. And then when we start talking about, you know, the common ways that Christians address culture, whether it's fortification, you know, like bunkering down and waiting for Jesus to come back, or domination, you know, the culture wars and fighting, or accommodation, which is just sort of like, hey, I'm okay, you're okay, let me just blend in and try to make it through this mess. Mm-hmm. That really resonated with me totally, in this idea that we are in exile. Like, this is not
where we're supposed to be.
Yeah, right. this is not a light on a hill, right?
Yeah.
In some regards it is, of course, but this isn't home. And
so it's a tough question, figuring out what we do in this strange place that doesn't make sense to us in a lot of ways. Yeah.
Right. And even the whole concept of like there's an us and them, and it's really like, no, we're all sort of estranged from our true home. And what does that look like? And how does that change the way we engage?
Well, we're already getting into some of the deep stuff. So I appreciate that. I was going to ask I don't know. I think our listeners are going to watch the trailer, hopefully before they watch this, at the very least. And when I first saw the trailer, I was just kind of like, whoa, like this is a cool project. I was like, you know, it's got the cinematic music and sort of a weird but sort of really documentary, sort of just really artistic feel to it. And I don't think there's a lot of sort of Christians doing that sort of work when they're trying to tell these sorts of stories. So I was just going to ask you, what's your favorite movie? Was there any artistic inspiration behind this film? Because it's very artistic.
Yeah, I mean, for me, anytime I can meld Christianity and Pee-wee's Big Adventure in the same sort of genre, that's all. I mean, like, wow, that's a dream come true. Mm-hmm. So that was very much like building a playhouse was very much something that has always been sort of a dream of mine that I got when I watched Pee-wee's Big Adventure, I think for the first time when I was like, you know, 7.
Okay.
And just being like, whoa. But we, as a team, we really kind of said, like, we want to do like Sesame Street and Mr. Rogers meets the deep theology, and what would that look like? And so that was a lot of the inspiration. The movies that I don't really have favorite movies, I have movies that I watch every year that I'll sit down and watch, and those are On the Waterfront, The Graduate, Pee-wee's Big Adventure, Cool Hand Luke, The Lives of Others.
Okay,
but yeah,
okay. This is Mr. Rogers and Sesame Street meets theology. That's
okay. Sort of heavy theology. Yeah, a playhouse where we can talk about all those things.
So you use a lot of big words in the film. One of them, and then probably the most important one, is oikonomia. And is that a disease? Is that what is? Can you tell me about that a little bit?
Yeah, oikonomia is, you know, sort of God's plan for all of the cosmos. It's sort of like how, well, even still, it's hard to talk about. Again, I'm just a dude here trying to figure this out. But it's sort of like God's mission for the whole world and how we fit into that mission through our stewardship in various, you know, areas of life or spheres of life.
So that really is the bigger story. That's, you know, that's that's everything.
It's everything.
God's mission for creation. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. And that was so people would say, like, so what are you working on? And I'm like, it's a movie about everything.
I'm everything that's important, basically. Yeah.
I'm kind of tired. I think I'm going to go lie down.
I know, just not
use my brain for a little while. Yeah. So you, it's a series of 7 different episodes, and each mm-hmm. one kind of has a different theme. One of the ones that I really liked was the one on order, and you start off by talking about hockey. And yeah. there's sort of an analogy that, you know, in hockey, people start fighting, you know, they get a little rambunctious and, you know, there's just madness. Like the gloves come off, the jerseys are coming over your head, but then the referees step in and say, no, you can't do this. We need to have order. And, mm-hmm. but at the same time, the only thing, I think Anthony Bradley says the only thing worse than, the worst thing in watching sports is watching an overmanaged game. Yeah. How does that apply to society?
Wow. Yeah. So, I mean, my take on that is really sort of like we have been created, right? And like in the image of God. So like we have enormous amounts of grace and gift and beauty and ability sort of just infused in us, right? Mm-hmm. It's the image of God in and through us. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of times we're really quick to kind of shed that in the face of definitely sort of like brokenness or crisis, or even in just our main decisions to try to get something accomplished. We really go for the path of least resistance. And as a result, I think culturally we end up very much giving away so much of our freedom and our ability to make good decisions. And really, I would say to bear God's image in the world. And we sort of let other things dictate how we are going to live and react and respond, mm-hmm. rather than starting at a fundamental point that we are image bearers of God, and all of us have enormous amounts of dignity. Mm-hmm. And so,
what's the key of... What's the key to society flourishing on its own without constraints, without referees?
I don't think it's possible. I mean, I think, okay. Referees and all of that.
With, I guess, it's not possible without, but with limited refereeing.
I think responsibility is key. And I would mm-hmm. say responsibility for Christians to remember that everybody is created in the image of God, mm-hmm. and that Christians especially need to bear that witness in the world. Mm-hmm. And that's, to me, more what I see as the main problem. Wherever there's injustice, a lot of times I feel like it's because we're not doing our job. And I don't mean job, but like we're not being who God created us to be.
Yeah.
And so I think it's an enormous amount of responsibility on the Christian to be in the world and to be present in the brokenness.
Yeah, and a big part of that you talk about is hospitality. Can you talk a little bit? That's sort of crucial in that, just being hospitable to others and loving others well. Yeah.
Right, and it's not the kind of hospitality that's sort of like amongst friends either. It's not the church potluck mm-hmm. where, you know, Gladys brings the sweetest meatballs or something. Yeah. Like,
thanks, Gladys.
Yeah, thanks, Gladys.
These are delicious. Are yeah.
so good. But it's that kind of sort of risk-taking vulnerability that exposes your vulnerability to the stranger. I think that really demonstrates love and grace to somebody who may not understand that and may be experiencing that for the first time.
Yeah, I think that was one of my favorite scenes in the whole series, was you hanging out with this weird biker and just doing all sorts of like weird things together, like just eating sandwiches. And then you did a sort of little playhouse thing of Les Mis, which was just a beautiful little scene. And I like it in part because I think that's like the apex of your goofy weirdness in this whole series. Like, you make a couple faces in that where I just like started dying laughing, which leads me to a really important question. Is, are you as sort of quirky in real life as you seem in the film?
Probably, yeah.
Okay, gotcha.
I would say, yeah, there wasn't a whole lot of acting going on. There was a lot of like, where am I at? Was this would, this is something that actually would happen, I think, to me. And I still don't know where that guy is now. But
I mean, that scene too was just a great sort of vision of that hospitality to even the strangest people. Yeah. And, you know, I it kind of made me think, though, is there a limit to hospitality? Like, I know that we can't just go around picking up every hitchhiker that we see, or we might not live very long. So is there, I mean, that's obviously just sort of a question that we have to continue, like, being prayerful about, but.
Sure, and I think, yeah, that's a tough question, but I do think that my hope is that the episode really starts us to think about where are the areas that we are buffering ourselves to hurting people. Because the crazy thing about us is, like, we will always go to the lowest common denominator when it comes to other people, mm-hmm. right? Like, we'll always kind of think, what's the worst thing that could happen out of this situation? And I would say 9 times out of 10, that never happens. And I think, yeah, taking into account your context, though, and just ways that that fits for you,
yeah.
and ways that a church body can embrace hospitality in ways that respects the dignity of everyone is important. I know, like, our church, like, they open up their church for people to stay in, and then we can go to the church and sign up to stay there while the other families or whomever is there lives there.
Okay.
And that's, like, that's a way more, I think, that might be a safer approach. But I think I also have a friend who's just like, hey, if somebody needs a place to live, they can come here and it's fine. And they have 3 kids and live in Chicago, like in the jungle, you know, where The Jungle was written.
Okay.
Like that book, The Jungle.
Upton Sinclair.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like in that neighborhood that is now. And they have 3 kids and they're like, yeah, whoever needs a place to stay, come and stay.
Huh.
And it's just crazy.
Yeah. And I mean, it is just beautiful when you hear or see those stories of people just being like opening their doors and being completely vulnerable and gracious to complete strangers.
Yeah.
So
we can take a cue from that. That's for sure.
Yeah. No, definitely. Another word, not as big of a word as oikonomia, but another word that you use in one of the episodes that's really important is behold. Can you tell me a little bit about what behold means and what that means for us?
Yeah. So behold, as we were writing this, we really wanted to talk about the idea of getting lost in the eyes of your lover and how useless in terms of utility that really is.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's just the admiration and celebration and cherishing of beauty, right? Mm-hmm. And we really, especially as a church, I don't think we really do that too well. What's funny is culturally, if you go, like, Google has this thing called Ngram, where you can type in a word and it will show you the history of that word in literature for the last 200, 300 years. And behold, started up like in a higher percentile. And then as we sort of progressed, the word just sort of went out of existence in literature. And I mean, maybe that's the English language sort of transforming, but it's remarkable to think, like, no, I think that also follows the trend. Like, we aren't really too concerned about what things are in and of themselves, and we don't take time to look at them, to experience them in and of themselves, only really in a way where they benefit us. And so this idea of beholding is really taking time
to just appreciate what's true, good, and beautiful, sort of.
Absolutely. To taste and to see, right? That God is
good.
That
the Lord is good, yeah.
Yeah.
And that's such a good thing, too. Like, if you tasting and seeing is such, like, it's just weird that we wouldn't do that more. Because it's such a thing that brings joy and just, you know, experiencing God.
Like, oh, totally. Yeah. And we spend a lot of time tasting and seeing Cheetos and reality TV. And it's like, doing? And we're just content with that. And there is just a
Ghirardelli's chocolate right over there. And it's,
right.
You're eating Cheetos.
Yeah, and you're sitting here eating this processed garbage. What's wrong with us?
Yeah.
And a lot of that, too, I mean, it's just because we want to feel good about something.
Mm-hmm.
And beholding is sort of absent of that. It's completely other-focused. And I think until you get there, we can get there, we're not really going to we're missing out on sort of the fullness of God and his creation and his gift to us, both in sort of the everyday stuff, but in human relationships as well.
So at the very end of the series, Stephen Grable says, if there's one thing you take from this series, it's the idea that the church as the body of Christ is a gift for the life of the world. That's sort of the title of it. Do you agree with him on that? Is that what you would say is sort of the central thing that people should come away with from watching the film?
Yeah, I think so. I think that's an important thing. I mean, recognizing that the church is a gift for the life of the world is a totally critical thing. But then the aftermath and what that means is even more important. Because if the church is the body of Christ and we are a gift to the world, like, then there's some stuff we have to be doing. We have to be making an offering of ourselves to the world. Yeah. We have to be there for the world and in a way that is vulnerable and is personal. And it reminds me, there's a Mike Metzger has a blog called Doggy Head Tilt, and it's a great blog, and he writes some amazing stuff. We reference a lot of it in the series. But he talks about the ABCs of church. And he says the church has ABCs, right? Like, they're concerned with attendance, building, and cash on hand. And you think, like, wow, yeah, that's kind of true. But how is that an offering?
Yeah, how's that a gift? Yeah.
Right. And, like, when you go around to the community and you ask, like, hey, is your church offering? Like, go to a community around a church. Do you feel that your church is an offering to you here? Is a gift-giving thing? What would their response be? And I hope this isn't too scathing. It's not what I'm trying to do. It's, you know, the church is an amazing body. But this idea that we are a gift given for the world, like, we are to offer ourselves and infuse ourselves in the world.
And we can't just be like that old Christmas gift that nobody wants, who's just underneath the bed, like, just collecting dust. Like, that's not the gift that we're meant to be.
Yeah, we're not grandma's sweater, which is endearing over time.
I got a Buzz Lightyear doll once when I was like 7 years old, and there's a video of me just leaping into the air like, yeah, Buzz Lightyear. That's the gift that the church is.
yeah, mine was Castle Grayskull. And I just came downstairs and was like, oh my God. You just run circles. And if we're that kind of offering, like that kind of gift, and when I say gift, what I really mean is grace, like this unwarranted thing that you don't deserve. You just get because you get it, that we are that way in our communities, that we are giving gifts and being grace in our communities and offering a place where people can come and be safe and be heard. Like, that is, I think, what it means to be the body of Christ and to give ourselves for the life of the world.
So I'm guessing that's really the point of this series, is to see churches be that in the world.
Yeah, yeah. We have an enormous responsibility that I think we can do better at, and that's to engage and love and not be, you know, not talk about what shouldn't be done, but start doing things that and living in a way that affirms. Mm-hmm. What is being done.
So what's next for you? This is obviously, you said you just sat in a room for 9 months, which is kind of terrifying. But you've been working on this for a while. What's next for you? Obviously, trying to get this out there as much as you can. But do you have plans for sort of projects after this?
Yeah. Actually, you know, right now I'm heading up a lot of the online stuff for the life of the world.
Okay, yeah, I've seen you have a blog. Yeah, I was just going to say, I saw a little video about, like, you playing with manure or something. Yeah, I don't know if that was, yeah.
That went disastrously wrong. but I'm working on something else right now that could actually go even more horribly wrong, which will be, it makes for great YouTube content. But so I'm heading up the blog and, you know, writing weekly, and then videos are, you know, biweekly or once a month. It depends what we're talking about. And I'm also heading up the Facebook and Twitter stuff. And so we're really getting that stuff off the ground and trying to be present in the online communities and fielding questions and, you know, starting discussions. That's really what we want to do now, is move into what does flow look like in your community once you've processed it and gone through it, and how can we help you do that? Mm-hmm. And how can we continue to provide you with materials and stuff to think about that will, you know, help you continue to live flow out Yeah. So doing that, and then yeah, we're the wheels are spinning for new flow material. We'll be having our church packets come out soon, which will have more stuff for churches in them. We call them the Exile Supply Kits.
Okay.
And you know, you'll be able to get
Survivor Kit.
Yeah, you'll be able to get some primers and t-shirts and some posters and stuff so that you can host your own events at your church.
Cool.
All that cool stuff. So we're
cool.
We're moving.
Staying busy. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, keep doing good work. This everyone who's listening should absolutely check out this series. It's awesome. Thanks so much, Evan, for coming on the show. It was really great hearing some of your thoughts about this.
Oh, thanks, Tyler. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, of course. All right. Well, we'll be back next time. Thanks again, Evan. Well, I guess we can. My cord is like wrapped around my head right now.
Yeah, because I can go off, man. It can get pretty. It can get my brain is a spider web. Or any future flow stuff, but what we are doing. Let me start over.
Okay.
Yeah.
We'll be back next time. Thanks again, Evan. Yeah. And I will edit that. We'll be back next time.